in this episode of Gareth Jones on Speed, we're boldly going where this podcast hasn't been before, to India on two wheels. Hello, welcome to Gareth Jones on Speed in Dubai at the moment. I am halfway between North Wales and Bengaluru, the city that used to be known as Bangalore, but it's now reverted to its more accurate name of Bengaluru. Why am I on my way to India? Well, three reasons, really, I suppose. Number one, I've never been to India, and I thought that'd be a really good idea. And number two, motorbikes. We've been making this podcast for 20 years, and not once have I ridden and reviewed a motorcycle, which is ridiculous because I had a motorbike license before I had a car license. I've owned bikes for many years, although I haven't owned or even ridden a bike myself for probably 25 years. So it's about time that we did something about bikes on the show. I did moot it a few years ago. Unfortunately, neither Richard nor Zog have motorcycle licenses or interest in motorbikes, so that idea went by the by. But I still thought I must do something about bikes. And a couple of weeks ago, I was given the offer of flying out to India to meet a company called TVS Motor. They are the third biggest manufacturer of motorbikes in India. And a couple of years ago, they acquired a great name in motorcycles, Norton. Great British brand with a bit of a troubled history. I think they were formed at the turn of the 20th century. They started manufacturing bikes, I think, in about 1924. The company changed hands several times. It's a bit like Aston Martin. I suppose you could describe Norton as like Aston Martin or Lotus, a known brand, but it's been a bit troubled over the years. Never managed to fully compete with other motorcycle brands, mostly from Japan, some from Europe. Here's the best example I can think of. If you're my age, right, in your 60s, you'll remember when all police bikes were Norton's. Yeah, the Norton Commander and the Interpol, which was the civilian version of that bike. Great big 961cc thumpers. But of course, the British police forces moved away from Norton to Japanese bikes and BMWs for many years. Norton were well known in racing, and they had Wankel bikes, rotary engine motorcycles. I was just reading a little bit of Norton's history, and very interesting that at one point during Norton's history, the Norton rotary engine was licensed for use in light aircraft. Interesting. Rotary engines are very good at maintaining the same speed constantly. That would make it a great aircraft engine. But Norton, who originally started manufacturing in Solihull in the West Midlands, a few years ago when they were acquired by another concern, set up a new factory in Donington Park. A very appropriate place for a racing motorcycle brand. They built their Commander there for a number of years, but unfortunately went bust. This is where TVS came in. TVS have continued manufacturing Norton bikes in the UK, but they've flown a whole bunch of journalists out from all over Europe to their headquarters in Bengaluru to find out more about TVS motorcycles. They make a whole range of all sorts of bikes, from cafe racers called the Apache. I like that, the TVS Apache. Apache Indian. And it's bizarre because this last week, while I've been preparing to come over here, I've been listening to lots of Indian music, and one of the tunes that plays over and over and over on my Spotify playlist is a song called India, Do You Really Know What's Going On? By Apache Indian, a rapper from the West Midlands who I interviewed many, many, many years ago. When was this? Oh, 92 or something like that. And so the fact that there's a motorbike called the Apache makes perfect sense. Now, what are TVS's plans? What are they going to do? Are they going to manufacture components over here, ship them to the UK and assemble the bikes there? Are they going to develop the bikes in India? Are they going to develop the bikes in the UK? Who knows? But the idea that the Norton brand, one of the greatest of British motorcycle brands, could yet be resurrected properly and have some kind of penetration in the market is very, very exciting. I've been reading about Norton's history. There have been some sort of car crossovers over the years. At one point, Norton were connected to March Engineering, who make Formula One cars. And I believe the guy who is the managing director of Norton in the UK at the moment was once the managing director or a chief player at Lotus Road Cars, not F1 cars. So you can see why Norton has a certain cachet. It is connected to deep-held memories by people who love motorbikes back in the 60s. I always wanted a Norton, always wanted a Triumph, always wanted a Yamaha TDM 850. That was one of my favourite bikes. Bikes I've owned over the years. My first bike was a Yamaha RS125, then I got a Honda CB200, then a Kawasaki KLR 250, then a Kawasaki 125, what was that, the KMX 125, then I got a KLR 650, and then I replaced that with a Kawasaki Tengai, a kind of Dakar bike, big 650 single four valve thumper, stands very tall. That's my kind of bike. I've never really ridden a cafe racer, although I did ride a Triumph Trophy around San Francisco a few years ago. That was very exciting. That's a great place to ride bikes. Now, this trip here, when I eventually get to Bengaluru, means I will get to ride a range of bikes. I'm guessing we'll ride some TVS bikes, but I'm hoping we get to ride some Nortons as well. So, I don't know if you've got an interest in motorcycles like I have. I'm guessing you probably have. If you're listening to Gareth Jones on Speed, you like cars, you like vehicles. You might not know a lot about motorbikes unless you've owned one, but here's your opportunity to find out about a great British brand that's back from the dead, I think, three or four times. Unlike Spark, who only came back from the dead once, Norton are back three or four times. Now, at the moment, I'm sitting completely on my own in the Emirates Business Class Lounge at Dubai. And, yeah, there's no one here. Well, there were people here earlier on, but they've all boarded their flights. But I've got 6 hours to kill between arriving here and my flight leaving for Bengaluru. I've spent some of that time dozing here in the lounge. It is vast. I have never seen a bigger lounge than this. Without exaggeration, I would say it's quite possibly a quarter or half a mile long. It seems to occupy the entire fifth floor of Dubai Airport. Oh, by the way, the flight here, got to tell you this because you'll understand why I'm excited. I got to fly on an Airbus A380 for the first time in my life. I remember when it first came into service, which was probably 2005 or something like that. And I was working on A1 Grand Prix at the time. And we were racing at Sepang in Malaysia, and I'd heard that the A380, I think it was a Singapore Airlines A380, was doing a tour to test its ability to hook up to the air bridges and things at airports. And so I actually got on a shuttle from the hotel out to the airport. What's the name of the airport? Is it called Sepang? In Malaysia's main airport. Went out and saw it parked at a gate. An absolute leviathan of an aircraft. And Emirates, who fly the A380, one of the many carriers who fly the A380, I think have the biggest fleet of A380s there are. And as we landed here in Dubai, I counted 20 A380s all lined up at the gate. Magnificent aircraft. Having flown on it for the first time, yeah, it's everything that they say it is. Number one, vast. I flew business class. I had more room in my seat than I've even enjoyed on Virgin flights travelling upper class, which I've done many times over the years. Very, very nice. Even got to watch Formula One highlights on my giant screen on the seat back in front of me. Ah, it was gorgeous. But the best thing about this aircraft for me is that the wings for it were built in North Wales, just down the road from where I was born and brought up. I'm from Holywell in Flintshire, and Harden or Broughton, just down the road, perhaps 15 miles away, is where the Airbus factory is, where they used to build the wings for the A380 and are now, I believe, building wings for the A350 at the moment, and probably some other components for Airbuses there as well. So I'm realising all kinds of dreams here. My three reasons for coming here: number one, motorbikes on speed; number two, coming to India for the first time; number three, flying on an A380 Airbus. I am a very happy customer. Right, what time is it now? Let's have a look. 11:32. My flight leaves in 1 hour and 15 minutes. I'm keeping an eye on the board here because I've got to go and board. Now, this second leg of the flight, the first one was, 7 hours? Second leg is going to be something like 6 hours. And I get to fly on a Boeing 777, which I've never flown on either. I've also not flown on the Dreamliner, so I'm ticking them off on this flight. So, yeah, let's see how this section, this next section of my journey goes. I feel slightly out of body, you know, that international travel thing where you sleep for 3 hours on a plane, then you wake up and you get to an airport lounge and then you fall asleep for an hour in the lounge and wake up in a panic thinking that you've missed your flight. But no, I haven't. Actually, I'm wondering if I have missed my flight because it's so very empty here. But in the remaining hour I've got here at the airport, I think I'm going to go and explore, because it's been 20 years since I was last at Dubai Airport, and it is enormous, an airport of the same scale as the A380. So, bit of a walk around before boarding my flight, and then I'll speak to you when I'm in India. And as they say in India, namaste. And relax. I've made it to Bengaluru in India. Hooray. I'm in my hotel. It was a long journey, you know, 7 hours from the UK, 6 hours waiting in Dubai for my connection, and then another 4 hours from Dubai to Bengaluru, and then 2.5 hours in a taxi from the airport to the hotel. But I have to say that 2.5 hours was absolutely fascinating. The second I arrived, when we went out to get in the car, I noticed, oh, hello, it's a Toyota Innova City Star. I've never seen one of those before, a bit like a Toyota Picnic or something like a Camry Verso, a big MPV, and very nice it was as well. And we fought our way through the traffic, and what a lot of traffic. Oh, there are a lot of people here in Bengaluru, and they all ride motorbikes. So many motorbikes here, lots of cars. The cars are interesting. What did I notice in the car park? Loads of Hyundais, loads of Kias, loads of Tatas, loads of Maruti Suzukis. Hyundai and Kia, of course, manufacture cars here in India. Interesting to see them being taken on board by the car buying public so enthusiastically here. So a couple of really nice little Kia, kind of, what would I describe it at? A bit like the Jeep Renegade sort of thing. Neat. Never seen one of those before. And so many Suzuki Swifts. I saw what could be best described as a murmuration of Suzuki Swifts. See what I did there? And all the different versions of the Suzuki Swift as well. They have the hatch version, they have a saloon version. Fascinating. Tuk-tuks or motor rickshaws everywhere, and some of the longest trucks I've ever seen in my life. I saw a couple of flatbed trucks with incredibly long flatbeds and incredibly long overhangs at the back. Makes them manoeuvrable, but that's quite an overhang to get around a tight corner. Helmets seem to be optional on motorbikes. Everyone is very well behaved. I have to say, everyone goes through a lot of trouble to avoid everybody else. Lane splitting is a thing that happens here because all the motorbikes are on the left-hand side. So all the people in the number one lane in cars split their lane into number two to allow the motorbikes, and that has a knock-on effect. So if you're in lane three, you're squashed up against the concrete barrier that separates you from the roadway going the opposite direction. But we made it very swiftly here. It was very nice, and what an amazing place it is. What did I see on the way here? MG dealerships, Porsche dealership with a Ducati dealership next to it, which kind of makes sense because Audi own Ducati. Audi, Porsche, all part of the VAG group, of course. What else did I notice? Ladies sit side saddle on the rear of motorbikes. In fact, at one point, we were in this huge throng of traffic, and this guy comes down the road the wrong way, trying to get through. He was trying to do a shortcut to get to his exit, and there was a policeman there who stopped him. But the lady sitting on the back, very elegant older Indian lady, sitting on the back of this little commuter bike, side saddle, so elegant, so graceful. And so many commuter bikes, lots of Hondas, lots of Suzukis, lots of Yamahas, presumably lots of TVSs, although it's hard to recognise those. I don't know the logo, but I'm learning. Didn't see any Triumphs or Nortons, not yet anyway. I saw some Royal Enfields. Yeah, they love their motorbikes here, so we've come to the right place. Now, I've got to go and jump in the shower and go meet the people who are taking us around TVS Motors factory tomorrow. They're in a microbrewery over the road, so I'm going over for one pint. So I've got to get up super early, and it's been a very long day, and I'm sure that beer will go straight to me head. But I've got loads to discover tomorrow. One thing I've discovered is that although we're staying here in Bengaluru, we're actually going to TVS's factory, which is in Tamil Nadu, the town called Hosur, I think, or Hosur, which is a bit of a journey away. But we're going to go and see what they do here and discover what plans they have for Norton. And quite honestly, I can't wait. It's wonderful to be here in India. Absolutely wonderful. And the food, oh, I've eaten good food on the flight. Can't wait to eat it here in India. But hey, this isn't a food program. It's a car and motorbike program. Well, it was a car program. Now it's a car and motorbike program. That's a good thing, right? Hey, how you doing? I'm at TVS's factory. I've just been given a presentation by a couple of big players at TVS telling us about the history and scale of TVS Motor. Quite possibly the biggest vehicle manufacturer you've never heard of. They are all over the place. Let me see, they produce, I made some notes, over 5.5 million vehicles a year, and if you include their three-wheelers, that's 5.8 billion. company started back in 1911, where initially they ran a bus service in India. One of their earliest innovations, which was in the 1930s, was to send out a vehicle, a road sweeper, that had an electromagnet attached to it, which would go around picking up nails and horseshoes. So, of course, much of transport was done by horses in India back in the turn of the 20th century. So it would collect all the nails and the horseshoes, and it would prevent their bus service from getting flat tyres. They call this customer oriented, that, you know, they got to make sure that their customers are happy, that they get delivered to wherever they're going. And that innovation of using an electric road sweeper ensured that. They've got a number of major manufacturing plants. This one in Hosur, which is in Tamil Nadu, a neighbouring province to Katanaka, which is where Mengaluru is, so just over the border now. They also manufacture in Indonesia, but the plant here at Hosur in Tamil Nadu is huge, 350 acres, where they build two and three wheelers here. Gaurav Gupta, the president of the two-wheel business in India, then went on to explain how the philosophy of TVS is to mobilise the nation. And they started that initially with their bus service, and in 1929 became a GM dealership in India, and in 1979 started manufacturing bikes. They started manufacturing bikes in Indonesia in 2006, three-wheelers in 2008. In 2013, they set up a partnership with BMW Motorrad to manufacture and develop bikes for BMW. So they're not just a manufacturing plant, they actually develop the vehicles too. They turned towards EVs, adding them to their lineup in 2020. And in 2022, moved into what's called the super premium motorcycle market. In other words, they acquired Norton, which will give them a presence in a part of the market which they haven't had before. In 2024, their turnover was $4.2 billion, not just from manufacturing. They have a finance company and housing as well. Similarly, Ford make most of their profits from their bank and loan department, so I guess it's a similar model there. They say that they are obsessed with customers. They're obsessed with exactness and sustainability, two of their core values. They're in 90 countries or more around the world, with what appears to be the exception of Australasia, Canada and China. Seems to be everywhere else. They had a partnership with Suzuki many, many, many years ago, but have moved away from that now. They are the third biggest manufacturer of motorcycles in India, which begs a question: who are the two biggest? Is that Honda and Suzuki? I'm going to try and find out. We don't really know TVS bike brands in the UK, but their biggest brand is Apache, which is their sports bike, I suppose. The RTR 160, one of their Apaches, has got a reverse inclined double overhead cam engine that was introduced in 2017. So they're proper innovators. They have a range of scooters called Jupiter, and they've got a range of commuter bikes which I think is called HSX. I'll find out more as we take a tour of the factory in a minute. 25% of their profits comes from export, which means 75% of the company exists because of the Indian market. They've invested £200 million in that movement into the premium sector. That's what they're spending on the development of Norton. They've just set up a new factory in Solihull in the West Midlands. And as you know, my mate Vince, who appears on the programme, lives in Solihull. So next time he's there, I think I'm going to go and have to visit Norton. But while I'm here, I'm going to learn more about TVS. We're going on a tour around the factory in a minute. One of the things that they're very, very proud about is they have a bioreserve here. Over 900 species of flora and fauna. And I'm hoping none of them are poisonous snakes. We're about to find out as we go on the tour. Listen to that. That is the sound of motorcycles and mopeds being manufactured. I'm inside the production plant where they build TVS motorbikes, and it's quite quiet, surprisingly quiet and very tidy, not quite sort of laboratory Formula One levels of immaculate, but it's very ordered, very, very smart. And part of that comes from TVS's history with Suzuki. First thing I noticed when I walked in, it's a big sign saying how they employ Kaizen production approaches. Kaizen is the Japanese methodology, I suppose you could call it, which is employed by Toyota in Europe, amongst many others, where I believe every member of the production team, or partner, whatever they call them, has the right to stop production if they spot something going wrong. Although this factory is pretty quiet, in order to be able to hear the guided tour that we're on, we've all been given headphones, and as we go through each section, somebody is explaining what's going on, and so we can hear everything. Would you like to hear a little bit of one of the people explaining what's going on here? Thought you might.
To almost 70 plus countries. That's where we embarked on having a phased approach of ensuring the planning is put in place. And we have a structured SNOP planning. This is basically a sales and operations planning where the entire demand is aggregated from the dealers. So all the planning is automated based on the inputs that we get from the dealers and the networks the customers. So this is our overall framework of it. And by doing this, what we have done is, earlier we used to do the planning at a model level, at a month level, at a very aggregate level. Now we are able to go at a very detailed level, at SKU level, at a day level. So at any point in time, I would know what is the SKU-wise stocks or inventories that a dealer carries, and what kind of dispatches that we need to integrate so that the customer demand is met. So this is a very high-level video demo of the platform that we have put in place, where the entire planning is integrated, and we are able to seamlessly integrate between the sales planning and the production planning process.
India is a very populated country. That's the right word, isn't it? There's a lot of people here. But surprisingly, most of the work done in the factory seems to be done by robots and machines, not just, you know, your classic Hitachi robot arm that's welding elements together, but much of the movement of components around the factory appears to be done by autonomous robots as well. They have drones which are constantly inspecting things from above. They have quadruped robots on trial here, you know, like your Boston Dynamics robot dog hopping around. And they have robots with all sorts of optical abilities as well, inspecting components for defects. So, yeah, they're employing some of the absolute most modern production technology and techniques here, which probably explains why the company has been unbelievably successful in the last, I think, did they say the last 15 years, they've more than doubled their profits. They really are on a rocket sled, this company. Or maybe they're on a very fast TVS motorbike. Interesting. Just been told about digitization here at the factory. They have a way of tagging components, which tells you not only which stand it was built on, what time of the day, what day of the week, but also the names of the staff members or the partners responsible for manufacturing that piece. It's not a blame culture, it's just so they can identify where problems occur and stop them from getting moved on to the next phase of the production chain. Something I was very interested to hear was that the robots, of course, here use machine learning to improve their performance, and some of the technology is listening as well, not just listening to engines as they're run and tested, but listening to the machines that are manufacturing the components to see if those machines are running at optimum efficiency, and doing that simply by the audio. Interesting. We're entering now into a sealed area of the construction facility where it's almost a clean room, and you can tell it's a clean room by this sound. Listen to this. That was the sound of my shoes walking over a sticky mat, removing any dust and gravel that may be attached to my shoes before I come into this area. And I have to say, it's nice and quiet and clean and cool in here. Nice and cool. This is their multi-cylinder engine assembly line. If you excuse me, I'm going to listen in on the guide and hear how this works, and I'll tell you what I've learned. Oh, hang on, okay, I can tell you. I'm looking around here, there are lots of signs above me. There's a final assembly conveyor, the crankcase sub-assembly cell, the shaft sub-assembly cell, the cylinder head sub-assembly cell. Try saying that with my lisp, by the way. Shaft sub-assembly cell. Cylinder head sub-assembly cell. Covers and GB plate sub-assembly cell. What's a GB plate?
Gareth Jones on Speed.
I'm watching the final assembly line at the moment, where you've got a conveyor moving. Well, how many winters you've ever had? 100 bikes on the conveyor, probably, all moving at a very slow walking pace with production team operatives, is that the right term? Working on both sides of the bike, and the bike is at head height, so nobody's crouching, nobody's bending, nobody's reaching up, and the people operating here seem to be doing several functions. Instead of a bike arriving in front of you, you tighten four bolts, the bike moves off, another bike comes in, you tighten four bolts, the bike moves off. Each worker is doing a series of tasks. They'll put on a component, they'll screw that component in, they'll put the tool down that allowed them to do that, pick up another tool which is hung from a suspended rack above, and do a separate operation. So I'd say every person is doing two or three different operations, which I'm hoping alleviates boredom for those working on the production line. And I do have to say, I'm very impressed at the number of women working here. Certainly in the final assembly line, almost 50% of the people I can see in front of me, and there must be 100 people on this line, are women. That's good. Yeah, I believe TVS have won awards recently for their diversity, and that includes gender diversity. And yeah, it's evidenced by the people putting these bikes together. That's it for this episode of Gareth Jones on Speed. In the next one, find out how I got on thrashing some of TVS's bikes around a circuit in Bengaluru. Remember, I hadn't ridden a motorbike for 25 years or more, so I'm sure you'll want to know how that went. I also talked to a proper bike journalist, Toad from visordown.com. He tells me what he thinks of the bikes we rode. And finally, a dig deep into what we can expect from the next generation of TVS-owned, British-built and designed Nortons. All that and more on Thursday the 24th of October. See ya!
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whiz Bang. Yeah!